everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the Tide, Honey Badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, what could possibly be better? Alabama kicks little brother in the shin en route to the third consecutive appearance in the SEC championship game.
No, man, it's always nice to go to Atlanta, and it's always nice to beat up on the Tigers. And now that we run the same offense, they can't even get a first down until about halftime, so that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I think they had one in the first half. I'm just going to give you sort of the open floor. I know you probably want to get mad at the play calling and the game plan and the quarterback play. I won't debate you on it. I probably have a counterpoint, but why don't you step through what you saw offensively?
I'm going to let you go first today, man.
Okay. Look, I'm going to lay it out like this. And again, onesie or twosie, but if we're talking philosophy, I'm going to say that setting up a game plan is like it's like a recipe. You don't just throw a bunch of stuff together. There's a little bit of process. We're looking at an Auburn team that had gone roughly, based on the stats that I looked at, they had gone roughly 8 games without allowing a rushing touchdown. We know that Saban's philosophy on defense is to shut down an opponent's running game and the rest of their offense will fall. And so if you kind of wrap that together, it's not unreasonable to think that the game plan was not to come out running from the beginning. The fact that that the Tide had success running in the third and fourth quarter does not mean that they would have had the same success in the first quarter. I think the game plan was purposely to pass the ball early, to frustrate the defense, to wear out the defense, and then come back and run the ball effectively in the second half. And that's exactly what happened. Was the passing performance flawless? Of course not, especially with the 2 interceptions. But we did have a freshman quarterback complete 75% of his passes in a big rivalry game for almost 300 yards. I continue to be impressed with his poise. And I think there was a logic, there was a method to the game planning magic process. And when I look at it with a little bit of a remove and I see how those dots connect for me, I think it's a bit of clever game planning as opposed to Kiffin was a moron in the first half and Saban called all the plays in the second half.
Well, man, I should have gone to Vegas, man. I could have put some chips down on red, being how you were going to, what side of the coin you were going to take on that one, man. Obviously I disagree. But that's cool, man. We can disagree.
And that's the surprise, right?
I was definitely not surprised with how you took that. And, I didn't think you'd be surprised with mine. You have to hang your hat on his poise. That's the only thing you can hang your hat on, is his poise. He played like a freshman. The difference is this team has a defense that, well, I'll say it this way. Because Saban has transitioned this defense to play against the likes of the hurry-up offense by dropping the weight of the players across the 3 levels. And we've talked about moving the cornerbacks to safeties and having 5 cornerbacks in the game, et cetera, et cetera. But because you've got the likes of Jonathan Allen, who can hold up at the point of attack inside and doesn't need to be 330 pounds, sure, this defense is now able to do better against these new offenses than they did 5 years ago. And so Alabama has got the luxury, because the riches get richer. They've got the luxury of, I mean, dude, how many games have we seen in the past? Okay, I'll put it this way. In all the years we've watched Alabama football, if you would have said against Auburn that we would have had 2 interceptions that were horrible passes and 2 fumbles and could have had more,
Sure.
And Auburn still wouldn't have had a first down into the, you know, deep into the second quarter. This is just not typical Alabama dominance. I mean, we have the luxury that we can like make all these mistakes and the freshmen can play like a freshman and teams still can't do anything against us. It's like utopia. It's not, it's almost like it's like Tecmo Bowl football. It's not even real football, it seems like.
Yeah, there's an element of unrealness that allows us to play the freshman at the quarterback position. And, you know, if you could go through and make it like a lab experiment where you tweak the factors and you're able to sort of run it on a computer model type basis and all the sort of different iterations, you know, if you take away a couple of players from the defense and the defense isn't what it is, then you probably don't start a freshman. You do have a little bit of margin, and there is some upside, I think, that to what Jalen brings that is different than what the other guys bring or brought, and that we're able to get to what he brings because we have the margin on defense, not just defense, but the offense as well, with sort of the stable of running backs and the stable of receivers. They work in tandem to keep the defenses honest. So, you know, look, Jalen is an opportunity to look at something glass half full, glass half empty, because he's not a full glass. He's not what he's going to be. He is a freshman. That's all he's going to be this season, but he can grow and mature. He's not developed in some ways that I maybe expected him to. And maybe these last 2 weeks, there's been a little bit of sort of regression, but I can live with that, right? Because he hasn't really, really rolled out a stinker, you know, for the team. And if you want to call this one a stinker, there's still, he completed, you know, 75% of his passes for almost 300 yards. If you just put that stat line out there and you say the guy's a true freshman without really knowing anything else, you're going to get 9 out of 10 football fans. They're going to say that's impressive. And it's true. It is. Now there's other factors, and then you factor in sort of personal preference. But I don't think you can get unless there's a mean spirited to it. I don't think it's easy to get too far away from still being at least somewhat impressed.
No, like I'm impressed with his poise. He has athletic ability. He tries to make plays that aren't there with his legs, and teams have gotten wise to it because they're watching the film. Sure. And so there is no mean spirit, okay? I'm being a realist. It's not hard to complete 75% of your passes when all your passes are behind the line of scrimmage for the majority. So let's be real, okay? He's not dropping back like a standard pro-style quarterback. He's not picking defenses apart, throwing crossing patterns, throwing deep slants, throwing post. I don't have the stats in front of me of his 0 to 10 yards, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. But once again, if we look at the percentage of passes he completes in the intermediate to deep route, those percentages are nowhere near 75%.
I understand that, but that's true of any quarterback. You could put Joe Montana out there, and the easy passes are easier to complete than the shorter passes.
Sure.
Guess what? Joe Montana in the West Coast offense threw a lot of short passes. I mean, the whole Bill Walsh philosophy was to use the short passing game as an extension of the running game. And so, you know, if you want to hold out there, Joe Montana, the best quarterback ever, well, he threw a lot of short passes too.
The pure drop back passing quarterbacks in the pro style offense are also going to complete more of those intermediate to long passes than he does.
A better passer will.
And they're going to do it by double digits. Okay. And so what I said a minute ago is this team has the luxury because they have players on defense that other teams just don't have. I mean, at one point, you know, on a third down play, you had Tim Williams, you had Ryan Anderson, you had Dalvin Tomlinson, you had Jonathan Allen. Okay. Four seniors who have come through a program and have gotten better, far better than they were when they walked on this campus.
Sure.
And I still feel like one of Saban's biggest strengths is he recruits the same players that Georgia and Florida State and Penn State and Michigan and all the big programs do. But if you look at what they do once they get here to when they leave, that's where there's no comparison.
And so that, I agree with that. Up and down the roster, both sides of the ball, that is almost a separate topic. But I agree.
It is a separate topic. But my point is at one point in the game when those four guys lined up on defense on a third down play, I'm sitting here thinking, this is why he can play a freshman. Because sure. Let's face it, in years past, he would have benched his ass a long time ago, and he would have put somebody in there with more experience. This guy would not have been the starting quarterback this many games into the season if the defense didn't do what the defense is doing.
Sure.
So while you talk about, you know, all the, you know, everything you said a minute ago about his progress, let's be real. If those early turnovers, if we're down, you know, 17 to nothing or 21 to nothing, do you think Saban's not at least thinking about it? You bet your ass he's still thinking about it. Granted, he came back from Ole Miss, and at the time, I gave him credit for coming back from Ole Miss. The kid's got moxie. Totally get it. But Saban said it best in his post-game press conference. He said, I talked to Jalen a couple times every week.
Sure.
And this week, again, I talked to him about taking what the defense gives you and not trying to make plays that aren't there. Well, guess what? Third and one in the red zone in the first series where we should have put points on the board. He should have handed the ball off to Damian Harris and got a first down on third and one. What did he do? He saw the cornerback blitzing in off the edge. He said, I can outrun you. But guess what? OJ Howard was blocking that outside defensive end out so Damian Harris could run up the middle. Jalen thought, I'm fast enough to beat you. Well, guess what? Now that the LSU game has been played a few weeks ago, teams have seen this, and teams have said, we know how to shut Jalen Hurts down. Jalen Hurts is not going to run outside on us because here's how we're going to stop it. But yet on third and one at the 8-yard line in the first quarter of a big rivalry game when 7-0 would be better than 3-0, he tried to outrun him and he lost 7 yards.
Yeah, he should have.
Why? Because he's a freshman. And so yes, is he going to continue to get better? Of course he is going to continue to get better. There's no doubt. But right this second, Saban's big thing of managing the game and protecting the ball, I am shocked that he doesn't get on his ass more for 4 turnovers in a game like this. I'm shocked, to be quite frank.
Well, I think Saban's managing his personnel, and he does get on to Jalen, and I think he picks his spots, and I think that he recognizes I'm gonna get on to a true freshman quarterback maybe differently than I will someone else, and I think that's appropriate. I think that's wisdom at the head coaching position.
Well, and it was 2nd and 1 actually, which makes it even worse. It was 2nd and 1 at the 8 as opposed to 3rd.
And he should have handed that ball off. I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to tell you that he was flawless in every way. That's one that I think, you know, probably either read was okay. And we talk about this at the game. I think that either read was probably okay, but that was a strong performance by a good defensive player. He should have handed that ball off. I don't dispute that.
No. And I'm not picking plays because there's plays he did well. Okay. But what I'll say is that I'm just saying the bigger picture is teams are scouting him differently since sure. The success that LSU had.
Which week 12.
And he has to recognize that.
And if a team has any merit about him, they've been scouting him since well long before the LSU game. I mean, it's week 12. LSU had a very good game plan. They did. They've just got the personnel to execute it. Auburn, I think, has good personnel. I don't think they're as deep as Alabama. I don't think they're as deep as LSU. I think they have very good personnel, and I think that's probably why the Alabama game plan was a little more stilted to the passing game. Than to try to run the ball even with Jalen, because Jalen had many fewer carries than he has in other games. So I don't know. I think the game plan was, look, we're going to try to pass against these guys, and there was some success. There were some gaffes there as well.
Oh, sure. But I will tell you, this is where we'd like to be on the fly on the wall and like to find out the true answer, because we can agree to disagree on your comment there about the game plan. You know, I don't know how much leeway Lane Kiffin gets to script those first 15 plays, right? I wish I did. I wish it was like, is it carte blanche? Like, Lane, you know, I'm going to give you some suggestions and you script those plays. Or is it a collaborative effort across the entire offensive coaching staff? I don't know. But once again, in that post-game press conference, which I love much better than the Monday press conference, sure, sure. They asked him about adjustments at halftime. And he clearly said, we had to run the ball more than we were running the ball. We had to stop running the ball with the quarterback. And we had to start running the ball more with our tailbacks. And we started having more success. And so does that mean Saban got what he wanted at halftime, which is what I think is the case, and you don't? Or is that to mean that?
Well, that's not mutually exclusive. If the game plan is, if the agreed game plan is to run more in the second half, then why can't that be both?
No, it can be if that's the case. I'm just saying I don't know that that's the case. And so I wish I knew how much leeway Lane Kiffin gets, because the guy does call good plays here and there. He does do a lot with his talent. We talked about the Blake Sims analogy and all the things that Lane Kiffin brings to the table. Is that this is a game like LSU that I think if they had come out and run the ball early, they would have had just the same success that they had in the second half, and it would have been a total different ball game. We can agree to disagree on that. And just like LSU, I think they would have won going away. I think they would have put their foot on their throat for Auburn. They would have taken them out of the game early. They would have run the ball down their throat. And then in the second half, it would have opened up the passing game, and you could have had a young freshman quarterback have all kind of people open because they would have had eight guys in the box. We just won't agree well on that, which is fine. And so I think they're doing it backwards. I think they this is too many weeks that we see the same game plan. And so when you play a team like Ole Miss, okay, I'll say it this way. LSU and Auburn, I think this was the wrong game plan. I think you take the second half, you bring it to the first half, and you flip-flop it, okay? Because I think they have more athleticism on the defensive side of the ball. And so trying to stretch the edges. Take our Darius Stewart. They did that little end-around thing, right? And he had success on the very first time he did it. He never had success again doing it because they shut it down. And so you and I both know there are teams they played early in the season where they did the same damn play on the right side of the field, they did on the left side of the field, and they both ran for 20 yards, right? Well, Auburn and LSU aren't those teams. And so I think as you go forward, Florida's defense is another example. I think they need to flip the script. If they make it to the semifinal, I think they need to flip the script. If they make it to the final, they need to flip the script. Because the defenses you're about to roll out here, I think you need to go with your running game, with your great wide receivers who are great run blockers, and build off that.
All right. What else on offense did you see?
One of the best passes that Jalen Hurts made at the in the second half, I think, was directly attributable to the play action pass. So the other thing I'll quickly say about the running game is I think that Alabama's bread and butter is the play action pass, in my opinion. And so, you know, he was able to complete some really nice, you know, that nice touchdown to Ardarius Stewart was because Bo Scarborough had been running the ball down their throat. And it set up a very nice pass to Ardarius Stewart for the touchdown. The 38-yard pass. So I like seeing Bo come out. And see, I like the fact that Bo came out to start the second half rushing the ball. I like the fact that he came out rushing the ball on the edges. His first three runs was over right tackle, over left end, over left tackle, then over, you know. I mean, it was interesting to me, and maybe this goes back to, you know, maybe this goes back to Auburn. Maybe this goes back to your point about Auburn's senior leadership in the middle with, you know, Montrevious Adams. Sure. Maybe they said, we're going to rush, you know, we're going to go at these smaller guys on the edges with Big Bo as opposed to going after, you know, Montrevious Adams. But I found it interesting that we chose Bo as our starting tailback in the second half, and we chose to go on the tackle edges for the first three or four runs of the second half.
Yeah, so still attacking the edges, just not in the same way as a jet sweep. there's some of the same principle there. It's just executed a little bit differently. I like Bo attacking in the second half. We share that. I just think I like the staging of it. You would have preferred that to happen in the first half. We both like it happening. It's just the timing of it. And I'm okay with that.
No, absolutely. Now, let me tell you something very quickly, too, because I don't want to forget to say it. I was thoroughly impressed with how Kervin manned up against Montrevious Adams. There were several times he had him man on man, and he won the wrestling match. It's not like he shoved him 5 yards on skates, you know, down the field.
Sure.
But I thought the guy played pretty well in a difficult situation against one of the best interior players in the country.
I agree. And that type of defensive lineman, you're not going to put on skates. You know, sometimes the best you can do is just stalemate them at the line. And coaches can sort of game plan around that. Look, he's not going to drive Montrevious off the ball. That's rarely going to happen. But if I can get a stalemate here, then we can win. We can manage around that if we can just get a stalemate. And so the fact that he was able to do that, I think was very impressive. Cam Robinson was in and played one of his better games. Those two fellows were both, you know, sort of escorted out of the game last week with injury. So it was good to see them both back. One thing I did not notice, and we've seen it in the last two or three games, is Corin rotating with Casher at that guard position. I don't believe I saw Casher in the game against the Tigers. I think it was Corin all the way.
No, I didn't see any rotation there as well. And now we also a couple weeks ago saw Cotton in there as well. You know, he got spelled in there some as well, right?
I don't know that I saw Cotton other than –
I guess it was Mississippi State. Yeah, other than special teams. I thought he had come in there with the twos. And so one of the questions I was going to ask
you – maybe late then, but yeah.
I got you. So one of the questions I was going to ask you real quick is, do you think that the Kervin, you know, getting his second start, do you think that that has more to do with having the extra beef because they don't have Shank in there? Do you think that that's why we are seeing a Kervin? Because you and I talked about the running game, and we talked about, you know, what Shank was doing in the running game. Do you think that that's why we're seeing Kervin versus Casher or Cotton?
Yeah, I think so. Especially Casher, because, you know, you line all these guys up, and I think he's probably the smallest of them. That doesn't mean he's not going to develop. He's probably the youngest of them too. I think having some weight in the britches, I think, does matter. You know, if Alphonse had not had sort of his off-season thing, and he had come in at kind of the right weight, and he didn't have the concussions, then I think he would have been entrenched in that position. It's been a little bit of a turnstile in terms of the, you know, we've had four different guys play at the position, which, you know, we kind of kid about that, but there's a reality there. I don't think Cotton played bad, and I think that he got to a point where he was actually playing pretty good, and so it was curious to me. And I talked about this a little bit last week, you know, with the Chattanooga game, that, you know, leading up to that game, Saban said that, you know, said what he said about Corin being one of the better linemen, which you and I talked about being a little bit surprised by. And then, you know, he went ahead and made the decision. And I think there was an injury, because we've not seen, you know, Lester really play a whole lot, and he's been a starter. And I think Coach kind of made the comment that they moved him to guard thinking that he would develop a little more quickly than he has, that he's more of a natural tackle. And I thought, well, that's curious 10 weeks into the season, where he's been pretty good at some points, formidable at that guard position. So I don't know. It's just, that's one of those things all we can sort of do is take it by faith, because we're not at practice every day to kind of see how it plays out. So I guess I just have to say, well, that's I guess true. And that Corin clearly has been coming on and coming on and coming on. And at some point, you know, maybe he was backing up Jonah and sort of ready to play at the right tackle position. And so Jonah kind of stepped up, and that gave Corn the opportunity to maybe practice at another position and really sort of built up some reps and some experience at guard and sort of surpass Cotton in practice. Those are the kinds of things. Those are the tea leaves I'm reading, but I mean, who knows, right?
Well, you know how we always talk on offense about one unsung hero who always steps up and, you know, becomes a key player for the Alabama offense out of nowhere. And so you and I would have lost our bets because, you know, when we've mentioned who that breakout player was going to be, Kervin was not listed by either one of us to my recollection. And that just speaks to how they develop players like we were talking about earlier.
Right.
I mean, you know, because on the telecast, you know, after, you know, we had watched it live, you know, Gary Danielson, I think he referenced five different players at guard. So whether it's four or five, you and I have talked about how we've had teams where we've had to go to our six linemen on the line somewhere and, you know, Olay, you know, let the bull come in. And so to have even tried all the different players they've tried speaks to the depth of this program is developing over the years with Saban. But to take a guy like Kervin from the defense and move him to the offense and, you know, to just come out of nowhere like this, and play in a big game like this, you know, just speaks to why Alabama is a dynasty and why it's them and everybody else.
No, I agree. And, you know, I didn't see Danielson say five, and I'd kind of wonder what his list is. And, you know, when you get into the second team, you know, okay, there's going to be another guy. But there's been four, definitely four, that has played with the starting line, with the starters on the line at the right guard position. I'm not counting, you know, Pierce Baker as sort of a fifth guy.
I bet you that's probably the fifth guy.
Yeah. Or it's the true sort of backup when we get to, you know, whoever it might would be when you bring in the twos. So.
Sure.
So I'll take it. I won't argue his five, but the four is what's meaningful for me because that's four that have played with the ones.
Well, hey, let me ask you real quick. Obviously, I would have liked Jalen to have rushed it a little bit less than his 12. I like the 7-10. I like the use of Bo in the second half. He finished with a respectable 5.3 yards a carry, but Damian Harris had a respectable 5.2. Mm-hmm. You know,
Jacobs was up over six with his average.
Well, and so I was going to say to you that while I'm very happy Bo has gotten his opportunities because he has been banged up.
Sure.
I'm also surprised that Damian and Josh between the two of them only got 14 carries. And I guess that just goes back to our difference in opinions on the game plan because, you know, in this game you had 44 rushing attempts and you don't know how many of those drop back passes Jalen just called his own number and pulled it down and ran, but when you look at this game, they had 37 passing attempts and 44 rushing attempts. I would have liked to have seen Damian Harris and Josh get a little more run than they did. But I guess that helps from a standpoint of, you know, having all our horses fresh going into this stretch run.
Right.
Damian and Josh didn't have to do a lot. Bo got to do some more and he hadn't been doing some. And so hopefully all three of them will be kind of ready to have their numbers called here in the next couple of weeks.
No, I agree. And I think that there's something to Bo and his size and getting his size in there against an otherwise a stout defensive front. And we saw that against LSU too, where Saban wanted Bo to run the ball against LSU and their stout defensive front. So there's still old school, you know, physical sort of smash mouth football in Coach Saban. There's no doubt about it. And I think Kiffin too, for that matter. And so I think there was a concerted energy. You know, Bo could have played last week against Chattanooga and he actually asked Coach, you know, and dressed, you know, can I play? And Coach said, no, I'm going to hold you out another game. And, you know, clearly this is what he was going for. I mean, you know, Bo had 17 carries. We could probably add up games this season in which he didn't have 17 carries. And I don't know that he's had, without all the stats in front of me, I don't know that he's had a 17-carry game this season at all. So
you could probably add up two games where he might not have had 17 carries.
Absolutely. And so I think there's a little bit of, you know, we wanted to go with a big physical back. I think Saban knows what he has. You know, B.J. Emmons is kind of you know, trailed off, and certainly he's had injury. So, you know, no disparagement there, but he's had injury. I think you kind of know what you got with the Bo, a Damian, and Jacobs. You know, they do three different, you know, they're three different styles of back. And so they're all effective in sort of what they do and in their space. But I think Saban wanted to punch him in the mouth. And when he wanted to come out and run the ball, and again, we could, I'm not sure. Argue.
No, I understand.
But when the decision was made, either, you know, however it was made, when the decision was made that we're going to come out and smash you in the mouth running the ball, Saban wanted to do that with his big back.
Oh, no, sure. Now, I will say also before I forget that early in the game, I was hoping to see, you know, some screens utilized. And due to the success that Jacobs had, I hope we see more of that in this stretch run, because that is something we don't use a lot in our arsenal. And I wish we could see some more screens in our attack.
No, and let me clarify, because you and I talked about this at the game, and I kind of ribbed you a little bit. You're not talking about wide receiver screens. You're talking about sort of a conventional screen to the running back.
No, I am. Exactly. I'm glad you clarified that. Not the bubble screen. We do enough different actions off of that. I just would like to see more of these middle screens sure. Just to add some versatility to the offense.
No, I agree. You know, you and I have been talking about jumbo packages, especially in short yardage situations. And I almost could not get the words out of my mouth when who do we see? Deron Payne and
Jonathan Allen.
And Jonathan Allen, thank you. Come in and lead block for Bo. I mean, that's a beef package. Brandon Green was in there as well. I mean, all the players coming out, and I was so excited I couldn't list them as you know, because there are just so many of them, right? Oh, we haven't seen, you know, how many times have you called for Brandon Green, you know, on a goal line situation? And so not only do we get him, but we get two defensive linemen to come in as well. I mean, that's like, you know, back when Cody and you know, some of the other guys used to do that, and to see both of them come in, that was pretty cool, huh?
It was cool, and it makes you wonder right there if Saban was like, okay, I'm showing you my cards. I don't care. Bo's been going down the field, right? It's short yardage. We need this. I'm going to telegraph this. I'm going to bring an extra 900-plus pounds into the game between those three guys, and I don't think you can stop it. And
right.
I loved it. I mean, that's you got them on the heels and do the knockout punch. I love the fact that they did that formation, I think, three times total in the game. And obviously, Jonathan Allen, obviously, Deron Payne has the athleticism with his fumble recovery in the Ole Miss game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Jonathan Allen has the athleticism because we talked numerous times about if he wasn't playing down, you know, on this mm-hmm. defense, we'd be screwed. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was probably the best two players they could have picked.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I think, you know.
Unless they get hurt, obviously.
Yeah.
That's a whole different topic.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. I think that, you know, there is a lot of room in football to sort of, you know, give deceptive keys and not to say trick plays, but to sort of, you know, is this going to be a run or pass? We've got the personnel that we could do both. So the defense has to be ready to defend both. I don't mean like a tricky dick play, but just, you know, where the personnel is such that they could do a couple of different things. And so the defense has to be, you know, I'm okay with that. Right. But every play doesn't have to be that. Sometimes it's Green Bay Packer. We're going to line up, and I don't care if you know what we're going to do. We're going to out-execute it, and we're going to out-physical you, and we're going to just beat you with superior athletes. And so sometimes I don't mind bringing in, like you said, 900 pounds of beef and say, well, we're going to run the ball, and you're not going to stop us. And, you know, we were successful doing that. So I would like to see more of that. It doesn't have to be every game. It doesn't have to be, but it's situational. And there are times, how many times have we talked about this, right? When you get a first down inside the five, you know, at the goal line, just bring
run
some,
the
just
ball
bring the beat package in. If you want to do a design rollout off of that, or, you know, the Blake Sims sort of run that he had a couple of years ago, or the Jalston Fowler kind of play sort of out of that kind of package. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because there's room for that to work, and there's room for that to be, you know, clever game planning as well. But come out with that sort of package and just punch somebody in the nose, and I'm okay with that too.
No, and this is why our podcast could go for 4 hours, because there's so much, you know, great stuff to talk about. Is I think Jalen had so much success early in the season of just calling his own number and just running behind the, you know, the running back who was going to block for him, that he tends to do that a lot, you know, down on the goal line. And so to your point, I'd love it if we're first and goal on the four, dude, we're going to run the ball four times in a row, because we think one of those four times we will score. Yeah. We think we can get 4 yards on 4 carries. And so instead of doing the quarterback sweep behind the running back, I would love in this stretch run them to incorporate the naked bootleg. I would love them to just run the ball straight at teams and then pull a rabbit out of your hat with his athleticism and just do a naked bootleg. And I think that would be extremely successful.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine with that. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Maybe it was the LSU game. I can't remember. But take – if you're not going to get the first – you know, let's say the defense – you know, give props to the defense. If they're going to have a goal line stand and they're not going to let you in, then guess what? You're getting the ball at the 1 yard line, as opposed to we're gonna roll out when you kind of half expect we're gonna do it anyways, and you're gonna sack our quarterback at the 8 and essentially get a first down loss. And a cushion. Yeah. And so, yeah, we're gonna pound the ball, and it's gonna suck for you because we're either gonna score or you're gonna get the ball in the 1. So,
and oh, by the way, our defense hadn't given up a touchdown since freaking October, so good luck. I mean, really, right. You know? So well, give me your mini game ball.
You know, I want to ask you a question, cause this is not my mini game ball, but, Ardarius, we talked about Ardarius, you know, he was 10 catches for 127. I think he had 14, targets. To me, he's a spark plug. He's sort of a security blanket for Jalen. I hope that Ardarius comes back next year, so we can kind of grow on that. But there's something that Auburn did twice. They brought in sort of a wildcat guy and he threw the ball, and Saban, you know, sort of coached up the defense. When this guy comes in, watch for this, because he was a high school quarterback. And I think we got him for a 3 yard loss once, and I think we picked him off another time. So it's almost like when we intercepted, you know, Tebow's jump pass, right? I mean, what you got, we're ready for. So, when you consider that, Ardarius threw a pass because he was a high school quarterback too. Do you think that was probably more lane than coach, but do you think that was a little bit of, yeah, we can beat you with that shit too?
I do think that's him being his childhood, going back to his childhood roots. Yes.
Yes.
Saban made a comment, as well in that post game press conference, which was kind of cool. He talked about the adjustments at halftime in the locker room for the defense.
Yes. Yes.
Did you hear this? And so for the listeners that might not have heard this, he was talking about a couple plays that was given up in the passing game in the second half, a couple shots that they took. And he was like, we drew up the play in the locker room. We told the players they will run this play.
Right.
Here is exactly what they will do. He said, now, we ended up playing against the run more than the pass as far as how we ended up lining up. And so they had those couple shots that they had success with. I thought it was so cool. He was like, you know, we've been coaching against these guys for 10 years. And
yeah.
We knew exactly what they were going to do in the second half. We told them they were going to do.
Yeah, we kind of know what they're all about, which I love, right? Because – that's about as much as he's going to say about what we think about it. Sure. And so I think that's pretty awesome. You want to do mini game ball? Or you want me to go?
No, I'll go. I got two. First goes to Hale, who had been kind of, you know, playing a little bit behind Miller, and Hale got more opportunities in this ball game. And he got more opportunities, especially in the second half with the running game. And so, you know, unheralded, you know, didn't fill up the stat sheet. but did some good things. And so I wanted to mention him. And then obviously, you know, not to go back over it, you know, Corin Kervin. I mean, yeah. He's the epitome of your mini game ball. And if he doesn't have the game he has at right guard, you know, it changes the complexion of the game if Montrevious Adams kind of goes crazy.
Sure. And it makes me wonder if that wasn't some fore scouting, you know, because we've got this massive coaching, you know, sort of assistants and whatever, all, you know, sort of this academy of coaches that are always sort of scouting and looking and all that. Was there a little bit of, and we talked about the size of Corin, there might have been a little bit of, hey, we've got some stout defensive fronts coming up, and if we're not going to have Alphonse, then we need to find someone with some sand in their britches and get them ready to play. And that may have facilitated some of the rotation as well.
And see, guys, this is why we love doing this podcast, because you're not going to hear that shit anywhere else.
Right.
Right. That they potentially started putting those tea leaves in place a month ago.
Yep.
All right. Give me your mini game ball.
Mini game ball. You know, I'm kind of going the same sort of theory as you are. OJ Howard, I know he's kind of a star player, but just his contribution was sort of off the grid on Saturday. I mean, he had five catches, but only 45 yards. A couple little inside shuffle passes, which I think those were pretty good play calls. And I think his blocking, I think he's underrated as a blocker. I just think he's a contributor when he's out there on the field. And I think he's just one of those kind of quiet, sort of subtle participation sort of leaders that this team's going to miss next year.
Yeah, but he's going to make a lot of money in the pros.
He indeed.
They need tight ends who can block for the running game and just do the little things, and he's going to handle the little things.
Well, I don't think he's going to.
He's going to catch passes too, but I'm just saying everything else he brings to the table, you know, he is building his resume for NFL draft day, right?
I agree.
All right, so let's flip it over to defense. And Tony Brown, I appreciate all the effort you have made to come back. You have got to bend your knees and lower your helmet, and you have got to put your helmet on the numbers. I went back and watched the replay, clearly targeting. It was really? Way more helmet than I thought it was. Way more helmet than it looked like from our seats in the lower bowl. And so obviously it's a quick play. It's in the moment. You know, obviously it's easy for me to say this behind this mic versus Tony Brown doing it, but thank goodness we had time to kind of regroup and make adjustments, you know, or give Minka time to reacclimate. But you know, this just goes back to the rich, you know, rich gets richer, man. I mean, of all the years Saban's been here, I mean, this is just some good stuff, man. I mean, you lose an All-American in Eddie Jackson. So you lose this great player. You take a five-star damn cornerback, you move him to strong safety. And because he's so freaking smart, you don't miss a beat. Then you have another five-star cornerback that you can put in his place. And oh, by the way, he gets thrown out of the game, and it really wasn't your fault, Tony. And so what do? We move the five-star back. We're able to bring another guy in at safety, and we don't miss a beat, man. I mean, teams must just be freaking shaking their head saying, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah. And really? Another highly rated, I don't know if Hootie was a five, but he you know.
I think he was a four-star, but to your point, teams got to be saying, teams need to have like 12 guys thrown out for us for targeting to have a freaking chance.
Well, and if you layer into that, I'm glad you brought up Eddie, right? If you layer into, and so that was in the first half, if you layer into in the third quarter where Marlon goes down with some sort of leg injury and former walk-on, you know, Levi Wallace comes in, you know, and so you've got Marlon out, you've got Eddie out, you've got Tony Brown out, and Tommy, we still came out and played some dime, and so now – do the math, right? You almost need a third hand. We're nine deep in the secondary.
I mean, well, that very much surprised me that we did a little dime there. I really thought we would just go nickel, and we would stay nickel, and we would shut it down, and we would just stay in our base. Because Levi Wallace, who didn't play bad in his other opportunities, He's small in stature. He's 6 foot, 170 pounds. He hasn't had the, he hasn't had the playing time that these other guys have obviously had, and
sure,
and doesn't come in with the accolades that these other guys have. But, you know, shame on Auburn, okay, because they didn't try to pick on those opportunities at all. I mean, let's talk about this real quick for the listeners. I mean, if you you know who Minka is, and you know, you're the coaching staff for the other team, and you know what they did with all the movements we just talked about. By damn, when Tony Brown goes out of the game and Minka has to drop back to the star, buddy, I'm picking on Hootie like three of the next four plays. I'm going to make him run 30 yards on the first down play, 30 yards on the second down play, 30 yards on the third down play. Oh, okay, sorry, I had to punt the ball. I just gassed his butt for 90 yards. Guess what I'm doing the very next series?
I'm going
after him again.
And I'm gonna
run him to his tongue hangs out.
Right.
And so explain to me, because you and I are not coaches and we're not qualified to be coaches, but why did Auburn not pick on that situation at all?
Yeah.
Except for a couple throws.
Yeah, and they did pick on him a little bit, and I think he got burned once, but
no offense to Hootie, whoever the player is, I'm saying, why did they not pick on that opportunity to try to stretch us there?
No. I agree. And I would put, you know, and again, we're not picking on anyone, but I would put Levi Wallace into that as well. Again, and Deontay Thompson, when he came in, because we're talking nine deep in your secondary. I mean, how many, you know, coaches are going to look at their secondary room and say, if I've got to go nine deep here, we're in trouble. We are putting a target-rich environment on the field for the opponent. And you know, our nine may be better than someone else's nine, but, you know, there's a reason that they're 7-8-9 and not 1-2-3. I think it was a perfect storm for Auburn to have tried to take advantage of it, but it was the perfect mismatch in that they're – you know, they've played three quarterbacks, and the best passer of the bunch wasn't available.
And it doesn't hurt, right, that Jeremy Johnson lost his starting gig at the beginning of the season when he threw six interceptions.
Right.
So to your point, I guess that's it. I guess they just didn't want to take as many chances. But, hell, they had nothing to lose in the second half,
no,
right?
They didn't. And so you think that, you know, you try to take those chances, but – I don't have an answer, because you have to at least try. And they did. I don't want to say that they didn't, but you would think that they would be a lot more aggressive. But I don't know. They're more of a running team, even with their spread, which spread – people equate spread to passing. You know, some of the better spread teams have been more prolific running teams. Even go back to Oregon. You know, they were 60-40 running the ball. Even when they were putting up all those points under Chip Kelly, they were more of a running team, even though they were a spread team. So they were effective with the ball on the ground, and their quarterbacks were not as effective with a ball in the air. And so what could have been an opportunity for them to advance the ball, you know, passing, they weren't able to. And, Tommy, I'm not going to discount the fact that their time of possession on the game was 19 minutes and 31 seconds. And so there's a little bit of, I don't care what I want to do on offense, I have got to eat some minutes to rest my defense, or this thing is even going to get more out of hand.
Well, the fact that they started the game, you know, we had the blown punt coverage. They started our 21-yard line, and they lose 3 yards and settle for a field goal. I mean, that just started it right there. And the fact that they had the opportunities of the starting field position due to turnovers and that punt return, and they couldn't do crap with it. I mean, the tea leaves were there. I mean, it was like you said, as far as the perfect storm stuff. Well, I will tell you that I expected the game to be closer because of Daniel Carlson. And I agree with your grandfather, Carlson. You are a turncoat. I thought with that strong kicking game that they would be able to keep this close. I actually expected more with the return of Cameron Petway. I thought bringing back that 240-pound running back from Prattville, Alabama, I really thought that, you know, I don't have the stat in front of me, but his yards after contact in these other matchups, you know, like 65% of his yards on the season have been after contact. And so I said, you know, you and I have sat here and we've talked about this floodgate and we've talked about this floodgate with this, you know, with this lack of depth at the inside of our defense. And so I was like, okay, now we got a 240-pound battering ram. How's he going to do? And when you go back and look at the stats, man, I had to like, this is another thing, right? If you're Auburn, okay, you only gave him the ball 12 times. Now, he had 26 yards, only 1.4 yards per carry. That blew my freaking mind. How did we stop that guy to 1.4 yards per carry?
I don't think he was fully healthy. I don't know if that's an unsexy answer. I don't think there isn't any razzmatazz to the explanation.
That would make sense as to why they only gave him the ball 12 times.
Yeah, I just don't think he was fully healthy.
Well, to your point about the time of possession, what helped is our ability to get off the field.
Yes.
They only had 19 pass attempts and they only had 26 rushing attempts. So, you know, going into this stretch run, as we talk about, I mean, hell, they only had 45 plays on offense. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And they were 2 of 12 on third down conversions. And so we've had a couple of games here where teams just couldn't get off the field. And I'll tell you what, this is 2 weeks in a row where I have seen some of the most vexing stat lines. So last week against Chattanooga, Garrett Dieter had a stat line. He had 3 catches for 1 yard and 2 touchdowns. Sort that one out for me. And then another sort of vexing stat is Auburn had 9 points and 1 first down.
Well, back to our lack of depth on the inside and Jonathan Allen having to play down and all the stuff we've spoke about and Reuben Foster, like, you know, here's another example where Reuben Foster and Sean Dion Hamilton, you know, they played the majority of the snaps. I mean, how cool is it that we just played a team with the number 2 rushing attack in the SEC and our defense was only on the field for 45 plays.
Yeah. And if you think about, you know, okay, next week we've got to go and play another game. How rested sort of will the team be? Well, I don't know. Defense will be pretty rested, right? They played a half of ball.
Well, the defense is going to be pretty rested, and we're matching up against a team that, you know, offense has not been their strength so far.
Right.
So that's a good thing.
I don't want to equate Florida and Auburn, but there's a lot of similarities, right? They're a stagnant offense with a really, really good defense.
No, which is helpful because then we can wear down. We can wear, you know, we'll get to this in a minute, but we can wear them down like we spoke about.
Right. Anything else on defense? If not, give me a mini game ball.
Well, I do want to quickly touch on, the play of, you know, the backups when they came in the game. I was very concerned when we came to the dime. I was concerned that, you know, how we would do when Adams came in there, but I was impressed in how he played. I was impressed in Levi Wallace and how he did. Hootie Jones took the next step to me. You know, I'll just go ahead and tell you he's my mini game ball, and I know he might not qualify, but he is starting to get more comfortable reading the quarterback's eyes and jumping the routes. And so when Minka had to go to the star, Hootie had to go to the strong safety position. And I thought that he took that next step. You can see him getting more confident. And before you do your mini game ball, because we probably should have led with this, another hell of a game from Ronnie Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I should have started the defense with this. So, Ronnie, we apologize. No offense to you, man. There were numerous times in the game that Ronnie Harrison was 20 yards deep at the free safety position, and he was making tackles in the flats behind the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
The range that this kid has and his ability to float is amazing because the strong safety plays at the line of scrimmage. The free safety plays in center field. And his ability to – he's getting more and more comfortable recognizing plays before they happen. And so his range of going from 20 yards deep to the line of scrimmage and being physical at the point of attack is freaking awesome. It is awesome to freaking watch.
It really is. And it's really that it's the game within the game. I mean, it's a little bit of inside baseball, right? When he lines up off the line of scrimmage, what's the quarterback read? He's in coverage. And so that can impact an RPO. That can impact an audible at the line. That can impact a play call. And then how did he just make the tackle in the backfield? Because he was in coverage, you know, 10 or 12 yards deep. That can mess with play calling. That can mess with the quarterback's head. You know, what was it? Quarterback at Michigan State said last year, they're everywhere. And he had a bluer version of that. But that's why a quarterback says that, because he was just in coverage and he made the tackle behind the line of scrimmage. How does that happen? That doesn't happen.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, as we talk about Eddie Jackson and what happened with Eddie Jackson, you know, and not being in the game, if Ronnie Harrison doesn't play the way Ronnie Harrison is playing, you feel the loss a lot more of Eddie.
Sure. Yeah. They just spread, they spread. It's not one guy necessarily stepping up, but they're spreading the step up, right? If everyone just steps up a little bit, then no one else has to come in and be Eddie, because no one can do that. But if we all step up just a little bit and we can play well as a unit, then that will give us the elevation that we need.
Oh, absolutely. Well, give me your mini game ball there.
I'm DB heavy on, you know, for this game, for what we've seen. I was going to sort of give the triumvirate of Hootie, Levi, and Minka for sort of their interchangeable parts, the way that they came in and adapted with Tony Brown and Minka going out. And so I sort of tip the cap to all three of them, because, you know, and that's one thing Coach talked about. Minka is sort of the biggest name of that bunch. But, you know, it's been a month, 3 weeks, a month since he's played at the star position. And Coach said he hasn't practiced a whole lot at it. It's just a good thing he played it a year and a half and was able to sort of, you know, move back. And so it wasn't like, you know, he's been out of the country for a year and now he's got, you know, it wasn't that bad. But it's still, he's been intensely picking up this other position to backfill. And then he's got a, you know, sort of on a dime, redirect himself and sort of get back in the flow of another position. That can be harder than it looks. And he made it look very easy. And then the other guys, you know, really stepped in as well. So hats off to the deep secondary.
Smart kid. Obviously. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. A smart kid.
Oh, without question. Without question. Let's talk special teams. What'd you see on special teams?
So I guess we've given too much pub to J.K. Scott. So he decided he had to shank one since we've talked so highly of him. Tony Brown going down affected him being gunner on special teams. I think the backfield of the special teams was not quite as seamless as the backfield on the defense.
Sure.
Adam had three, you know, Adam was 3 for 3 for the day, but back to your theory, he didn't have to stretch himself. I mean, he did a 29 yarder, a 25 yarder and a 34 yarder. It was nice to see him get the one right there at the half.
Yes.
But I will say, you know, Turncoat showed us what a strong kicker does. I mean, just to be fair, Joker was 4 or 5 for the day and he kept Auburn in the game by himself. But it was nice to see Adam be 3 for 3 and, he had 5 touchbacks on 7 kickoffs. So he did a good job there.
Yeah. And it was, you know, sort of a quasi pressure situation. There was a point in the game where, you know, whatever the score was, it was 10-9, I think at one point. And you think, man, any other team, this wouldn't bother me because we're going to sort of get over the hump. But there's something about this being stinking Auburn that they can't find a first down, but they're within a 50-yard field goal and they've got the kicker to make it of taking the lead. This is the type of game that Auburn, you know, I don't want to say that they could win, but it's the kind of game where maybe in the past they have. because they've sort of been outmatched, but they just have, I mean, they're like a cockroach, right? They just find a way. And so I didn't think necessarily that they would against a Saban team again in that way, but it was setting up like, this is what these guys do. You know, we can't score two touchdowns fast enough to outdistance them because there was a realization that, you know, if we get, you know, two touchdowns, if the Alabama gets two touchdowns up on them, that's going to be too much. And so their ability to score points, there's a cap on it that they're not going to score a whole lot of points, but I wouldn't want to be a couple field goals. I wouldn't want to be 3-6, you know, 3 or 6 points when they can, you know, score field goals the way that they can. And so just get 14 so I can sit here and breathe a little easier. And there was a point in the game where I was a little bit frustrated with that. And, you know, fortunately we came out and scored the points and overcame that.
Well, dude, had we not lost 7 yards on 2nd and 1 in the first drive, we would have got to that couple score mark a little quicker to ease your mind there.
Right. And, well, and you know, there's a reason they had 9 points and 1 first down, right? It was, you know, that's a very anomalous stat. It was the punt return and it was, you know, the turnovers that put them in position. So we gifted them those. If, you know, we talk about, you know, part of the downside on Jalen's performance, those are going to be those interceptions. If those balls had fallen harmlessly, then sort of the weight, the negative sort of impact on his performance is completely different. Take 6 points off their score, that's completely different. And that's us possessing the ball. Maybe we actually drive one of those times and score. And so,
and they have the ball even less than 19 minutes. So
I don't know how that happens at some point, but yes, you're right. And so if we're a little cleaner in our performance, you know, the Tide's performance, then it's actually more of, and this is one of those weird games where the performance was much, much more dominating than it looks, and especially kind of looking at the stats, but it's much more dominating than it feels at the time. For them to have almost no yards in the first half, then they should almost not have any points, but they did, right? And we had the turnovers that kept points off the board, you know, potentially points off the board, you know, for us. And so, you know, it would not be a stretch to say this should have been, you know, 44-6 or something, you know.
We should have definitely hung more on them than we did. Yes.
Right. Right. And so, you know, and it is what it is. And they were on scholarship too. And, you know, and they come out and, you know, they try to win the game as well. And they've got some talent. I'm just saying if the Tide had been a little cleaner, then I think the outcome is a little different. But, you know, it kind of is what it is. Hey, we're talking special teams and we talked about, you know, like you said, Adam was 3 for 3 and there was some quasi pressure. And so, you know, it was good to kind of see that. I talked about this last week and I wanted to bring it up again and kind of get your perspective. You know, Trayvon Diggs, for my money, the last couple of weeks, less actually so against Auburn, but the last couple of weeks, he doesn't seem natural. He doesn't seem comfortable back there. And he probably seemed more comfortable Saturday than he has the weeks prior, but you know, kind of what's your thought on Trayvon back there? Obviously, I know because Eddie, but Trayvon back there returning punts. Why do you think we've maybe not seen Xavien Marks?
I am surprised by that because, you know, Marks has the big touchdown, but then he has, you know, some – well, I think the reason Marks is not back there is because he was misjudging those balls, which was costing huge field position differentials.
Right.
And Saban's all that. I think that's his bogey. Field position is his thing.
Right.
And so he would rather Trayvon Diggs fair catch it and play the ball correctly than gain a single yard forward moving the ball.
Yeah. But Trayvon's had some of those too. And so I think that, you know, was he given a chance to sort of play through it and maybe Marks wasn't? Is it really
because yes.
Marks?
Yes.
Maybe that's what it is because he's a bigger guy. And again, Saban's kind of got some old school, you know, he's going to defer sometimes it feels like to the bigger, more physical guy. And Trayvon is demonstrably bigger than Xavien. I mean, Xavien goes like 165. I mean, he's slight.
Yeah, he's 5'8".
Right. And so that doesn't mean he can't be electric. That just
But Trayvon is 6'2".
Right.
That's you're talking 6 inches. That's a big differential.
So I don't know. I'm just not as comfortable. And, you know,
You got used to Eddie Jackson and there is no, I mean, what is interesting to me is
Cyrus last year and, you know, and just other players, right? This just seems if you were to run together, who have we had back there? This is the year where, to me, it feels like there's a drop off, you know, once Eddie went down.
No, there has been a drop off. And interestingly enough, though, I don't think with this defense, if Saban keeps them from driving the field and he fair catches the ball at the 45-yard line, he doesn't care.
No, that's fine.
I think he's like, okay, we lost Eddie Jackson. We lost what Eddie Jackson brought to the table. I'm surprised he hasn't tried our Darius Stewart, even though that would drive me crazy. I'm surprised he hasn't tried Cam Sims. I'm surprised he hasn't tried some other guys. Okay.
No, Sims, I think is sort of too tall and a little wiry. I don't know that he goes.
I'm just saying I'm surprised he hasn't tried somebody else to try to reinvent the explosive behavior. I think our Darius Stewart would be the next closest thing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I'm glad he hasn't because of what all our Darius Stewart brings to the table.
Yeah.
And so I think he's kind of said, you know, I don't feel like I've got anybody else right now. So just fair catch the ball and let's just get our offense on the field.
No, I think that's fair. Right. You know, after actually scoring the ball, the second best thing you can do is possess it. So, you know, I will possess the ball on the 45 all day long.
And the other team will possess the ball 19 minutes, like we talked about. So they don't care. Right. Now, I will tell you this defense ability to keep teams from scoring is helping your frustration with the kickoffs because Dieter had one kickoff and he gave all this damn effort to get to the 25-yard line, and our Darius had two kickoffs for 37 yards. So, and you look at Auburn, they didn't do any damn better. And right. So it's like we need to send out a damn bulletin to college football return guys. Just take the ball in the end zone, get the ball at 25 every time.
Well, we talked about it at the game. If I were the coach, I would instruct the PA announcer to announce negative yards on the return.
That would be so freaking cool.
Man, could you imagine people in
the our Darius Stewart has just lost 5 yards on the play.
Our Darius Stewart, -5 on the kickoff return.
You'd be like, I'm taking that damn knee in the end zone next time.
Fans would, could you imagine, like, fans would be like, what? What is that?
Is there a new rule?
-5 yards on the return.
No, that would be awesome. All right, let's talk about Florida, man. Mine's going to be quick, so I'm going to let you start. What do you think happens here? You know, we got to play these guys last year, and they lost 29-15 to the Crimson Tide. What do you see for this game, given their performance against Florida State on Saturday?
Yeah, and that 29-15 wasn't as close as that. And I remember doing that show, and I remember you know, sort of compiling and looking at the stats. You know, Alabama just completely throttled and dismantled the Gators, you know, last year, save for a couple of big plays that they had. And I don't know that Florida's as good as they were last year on offense or defense. I just don't think they're as good on either side of the ball.
Definitely not on offense. Yes.
Yeah. And Alabama has proven to be, you know, at least as good and maybe better. And maybe on both sides of the ball. I don't know, but certainly at least as good. I think that, you know, I saw where McElwain released their injury report. And for a little bit, I thought, man, is he pulling a Bill Belichick? Because he listed so many guys. And then I looked at it a little more closely. And about half the guys he listed, he said, are out. And so I thought, nope. You know, you might list a bunch of guys like, oh, he's got a stub toe and a hangnail. And so I'm going to put him on the report. So, you know, maybe that creates a little bit of deception, but if somebody is out, they're out, you know, you're not gaming. You're just, you know, you're sort of following the rules and announcing that. And there are so many folks that they have out, and they've got some disruption on the offensive line as a result of that. I don't want to be the guy that says Alabama could pick their score on this. I think I read somewhere where someone said that. I think that's a little audacious because, I mean, it is the SEC championship game, and it is,
you know. He's not going to run the score up on McElwain.
He's not, and it is Florida. I mean, they still got some talent. They may have to go deeper into their bench and have some youth, but, I mean, it's going to be they're going to be quality players even if they're inexperienced. I see this as a I'm even going to coin a term here. I am calling this, and this is like us being spoiled Alabama fans. This is a pedestrian drubbing. I'm calling a 36-6. And so it feels like, oh, we should beat them, you know, 48-7 or something. But I think more pedestrian, but still a drubbing.
Yeah, I think he's going to shut it down before he lets it get out of hand.
Yes.
Because of his relationship with McElwain.
Yeah.
I can see, you know, take this Auburn game as an example. I mean, you know, look at the final score that we had in this ball game, and we obviously, you know, minus the turnovers, we would have put more than 30 points on the board. So I think we're not going to see 50, but I think we're going to get in the 40s. You know, he's not going to be crazy about it, but you know, you can't start taking a knee in the third quarter. So I think it's going to be something like 42-7. I think they're going to break the touchdown streak. They're going to have some fluke play and get a touchdown, but it's not going to be close. I was going to ask that question.
They break the touchdown streak.
I think they break the streak, but this ain't going to be close, man. I mean, this is going to be worse than it was last year for the Florida Gators, and they're going to be pissed off.
Right. I like the ability that we have to say that, oh, we've not allowed an offensive touchdown since October. So think about if we sort of take care of business here in very, very, very early December, and the next game isn't played until the whole month of December has transpired, how much better sounding of a stat would that be on December 31st when we're able to say Alabama hasn't allowed an offensive touchdown since mid-October, which by then it'll feel like forever ago.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think this is going to be a fun game to go and watch, and we're going to be able to celebrate and have some drinks early.
Yeah, and you know what? This is just one of those things, and you and I try to do this, and it's hard. Man, we just got to enjoy this. This is a ride that we just have to enjoy. You know, this is the third consecutive trip to the SEC championship game. It's teed up for it to be the third consecutive win. I can't remember the last time. You know, I'm sure there's a stat book somewhere. You know, when did someone last win it three times in a row? And then this is the opportunity to have, you know, three berths into the playoff. And, you know, I sort of penned an article that hopefully I'll post. And I said, you know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, the inaugural three playoff berths we've made, our playoffs, we've made a berth into each of them. And unless we beat that record next year, it's the kind of record that can stand for like 20 years. Now, if they expand the playoffs, sort of, you know, but it's the kind of thing, if you think about the history of football and sort of everything is sort of now, and trees grow to the sky and stuff like that. But it's the kind of thing you think, you know, three consecutive berths into that type of a tight field, that doesn't happen. That can be very rare, right? And so that's the kind of thing that can last 20 years. And we should just enjoy this moment because, man, it's so much darn fun. And one day it will end.
No, one day it will end. And I do think it speaks a little bit to right now just the huge talent disparity between, you know, Alabama and other teams in the SEC.
Right. I'm not even suggesting that it's about to end, but I'm just saying, man. You know, because I remember even just you and I, right, that just there was a different level of sort of joy, you know, back in, you know, we played Florida the last two times, right? Well, back when we played Florida, you know, back to back, you know, several years ago, right? There was a different level of joy versus maybe now it's expectancy. And, you know, I would give a little bit to have some of that sort of authentic joy. It's maybe different from what we have now because it is different.
Oh, it is. And, Bama fans just need to enjoy it for sure.
Right. Absolutely. All right, man. Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.